All right. You're listening to an all new generation declassified here, just like you do every single week, except for when I throw up an old rerun. This week, of course, joined by the great Husey, making his remarkable 377th appearance on New Generation Declassified, which is interesting because there's only been 128 episodes, which I'm also very bad at keeping track of, Husey. But nonetheless, I was doing some episodes about the fall of 1996, mostly talking Survivor Series, but I felt I needed a little bit more of a deep dive into that time frame. Not just in the WWF. We're going to start expanding the universe a little bit more. And you yourself lived it. You're here to talk about it. And you're on New Generation Declassified once again.
Yeah, no, it was that whole time frame was, as a fan, both in-ring and behind the scenes, was just fascinating because the idea of being an insider mark wasn't exactly like a complicated process where you could just pick up a magazine and you're finding out, wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
Who's feuding backstage? Like, it was, this is when people went from being fans to marks, and it was a great time for it.
Yeah, some say might not have been for the best. Others think it was the best thing that could have happened and probably kept them around as being a fan. Now, before we get into it, I have to point out, and I failed to do this when we last spoke, I wanted to point out what my shirt said to you on It's Husey Hello, this wonderful Christmas edition that'll be coming out. It says, "All I want for Christmas is a new president." Come on.
Not bad.
Come on.
All the current president wants for Christmas is someone to get that smell out of his pants.
Or,
come on now. There's nothing wrong with shitting your pants.
All he wants for Christmas is ice cream. All he wants for Christmas is to sniff little children. I mean, yeah. Or we can go shit in the pants, either one.
Come on now, there's nothing wrong with shitting your pants. It's perfectly fine when you're trying to run a nuclear business.
Exactly. Well, back in 96, he was quite the, strapping fella. You know, he was on top of the world in Delaware, you know, because there's a lot going on in Delaware. But in 96, specifically in the fall of 96, wrestling was quite the, the dog fight, right? The WCW contingent of the NWO was dominating everything. And literally everything. They were more interesting. They were easier to watch. They had better characters. They had cooler vibes. And the WWF was still kind of riding the wave that they always did of just being the WWF, so that would have got them to kind of stay where they were. But they were slowly dropping throughout the summer and into the fall. They hit a low point, but then we're starting to come back up a little slowly. And I talked about Survivor Series 96. What do you remember about Survivor Series 96?
I remember 96 being, as a fan, because 96 was a weird year in that. But here's my controversial hot take that I always say on YouTube every once in a while to rile up the marks, where I think Bret Hart is the most overrated wrestler of all time. I'm not a fan. I loved him when he was a bad guy in Hart Foundation.
Okay.
But apart from that, I've always thought he was kind of dull. And when he left in 96, I thought, good. Because he's shit. Well, maybe not shit, but he's not that good. But when he came back, apart from the Steve Austin thing, when he came back to do the Steve Austin thing, it was exciting because Steve Austin is this cool as fuck, badass new character. He had the same birthday as me, so therefore I liked him no matter what.
Okay.
And so you could sense that something new was happening. And then, of course, with Survivor Series, you get some guy called Dwayne Johnson joining. Sadly, he faded into obscurity. The Nation started. The new Undertaker reboot happened. Sid fucking beating Shawn Michaels was excellent.
Yeah.
It's in hindsight. Although, that being said, I haven't actually watched it in full in a long, long time. But in hindsight, it would be one of my favorite ever pay-per-views. And without a doubt, my favorite Survivor Series.
Yeah, it's probably, like I said, it's probably one of the best pay-per-views of 96. Heard a couple other suggestions on the WCW side, but from the WWF point of view, oh my God, it was like, even if you go back to SummerSlam, it's a completely better show. You know, SummerSlam didn't have that firepower, even though it had, you know, the Boiler Room Brawl and it had that memorable Shawn Michaels and Vader match. It still had, Owen Hart versus Savio Vega. It had the Smoking Guns versus the New Rockers versus the Godwins versus the Body Donnas. So it still had that like ridiculous feel to it. But then, you know, the Undertaker's coming out in leather with a teardrop on his face. The Nation is this militant black buck the system. We're going to take over the place group. You know, you had The Rock. You had the Sid climb. You know, Sid was finally living up to being that badass, right? He always looked like he was the best, biggest guy on the roster, but now he was finally like a badass to go along with it. But was Shawn Michaels as the WWF champion something that would take you out of being a WWF fan?
No, I always liked Shawn Michaels, but the WWF had a problem back then of somebody holding the title for too long. And a long title run doesn't instantly mean that it's a good one. So with Shawn won the Rumble, Shawn won the thing at WrestleMania, which was March. So now we're towards the end of the year, and it's like, makes it fucking up. Because you could watch WCW, and not only was Hulk Hogan the champion, but it's like it's a new Hulk Hogan, so it's like a whole... But with Shawn Michaels, it's like, we have fucking seen this again and again. And as we went back earlier, we mentioned the March stuff. The behind-the-scenes shit was coming out about how he's refusing to do this, he's refusing to do that. It was weird because his matches were excellent, but again, much like Bret, there was a dullness of Shawn Michaels seeing the same shit all the time.
Right. But see, in New York, where he loses the belt and Bret comes back, Bret is three times more over than Shawn Michaels. So the crowd hates Shawn Michaels. They hate him as the champion. They don't like that, you know, kind of like frute like vibe that he gave off at the time with the earrings and the long, primped hair, you know, like it was not a New York flavor good guy. Whereas a Bret Hart is your hardworking, you know, I'm fighting from below champion. Everybody loved Bret, so everybody hated Shawn. So anybody they put in the ring with Shawn was instantly going to be the good guy, and Shawn's going to be the bad guy. But then Sid comes out with the black leather vest and the black tights, and he's just beating the shit out of the old man at ringside. How do you not root for Sid at that point? So Shawn Michaels just, you know, yeah, he was beating a dead drum. And they go back to the well, like you said, in early 97. But, like, I don't know. They should have taken it off of him well before they got to Madison Square Garden, because there was no way anybody was going to – if he won, there could have been a riot. They hated him that much.
Yeah, he really should have – like, when they did that – I always remember when they did that storyline with Bill Goldberg, the British Bulldog.
Yes.
That I've never understood, and it happens even today, when they will have a multiple pay-per-view feud where the champion, the babyface champion, keeps the title the whole time.
Right.
Because it's like, well, if you at least traded the belt, it may add a little type of intrigue there. But if it's just the babyface is going to have a controversial finish, keeps the belt, and then beats him again anyway. You just think, but why?
Yeah, and that the babyface is supposedly hitting on the guy's wife, right? You know, like, right off the bat, it was kind of made for failure, because it's 96. There's kids watching this show. Who the hell cares he's hitting on the guy? What? Who gives a shit? You know?
What, sex?
Right, yeah. Who cares? I mean, I'm trying to just figure out what this thing in the front of me does, let alone what she does over there. But, you know, the line like that they crossed with that was that he then insults the wife, like, you know, she's basically called her ugly. It's like, oh, this is the baby face. I'm supposed to cheer for this guy because this other guy's wife is nasty. Come on.
Yeah, well, he didn't lie. Just be real.
Diana Hart's had her moments. She's like, you know, we talked about Shania Twain in the past. She's had her moments. Or yeah. Gwen Stefani, excuse me.
Gwen Stefani and Shania Twain would both get it before.
Oh, I mean, yes, but still, Diana Hart has had her moments. Come on. All right, let's go to the video tape. Now
Georgia, the daughter, she's nice.
She's got a little too much of the bulldog in her. You know what I'm saying? You know, she's like, she kind of got the bulldog face a little bit.
That's what I'm into.
All right, so let me just run these dates down for you, okay? We're just going to stick with the fall. We're going to stick with November. These are the shows that happened in November 96. I won't say CMLL because nobody gives a shit about Mexican wrestling in the United States. So yep. I'm not even going to mention CMLL. No AAA, no nothing. Nobody gives a shit. So we'll just move past them. November 16th, my favorite ECW show of all time, November to Remember 96, takes place. Main event, Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer defeat Shane Douglas and Brian Lee. Have you ever seen that?
Never.
Great friggin' show. This was basically they were getting ready to get to pay-per-view, and this is where they really took the Taz and Sabu feud to the next level. But it also included this awesome tag team three-way match between the Gangstas, the Eliminators, and Sabu and RVD. And it's just an all-around good show. ECW vibe throughout. It wasn't corny. Oh, it's also the debut of the BWO. So there's another little point in history. November 17th, the next night, is the Survivor Series. November 24th is World War III from WCW, the 60-man Battle Royal. Do you remember that structure of the three rings?
I remember that having this. That's the one when, I can remember that one. That was the one where they did the contract signing with Hogan and Piper.
Yes.
And then the NWO jumped them. I remember that at the time being one of the coolest fucking angles
Agree. My favorite part of that show is that contract signing, because you got Piper taking on the entire group by himself. He didn't need to be aligned with anybody. He was going to take on everybody, and he didn't give a shit. It was also right after Bischoff turned, so Bischoff was a fresh heel, and it was kind of like laying the groundwork for what they would do with him as the NWO leader, or, you know, like de facto leader.
And I have to say, this is a thing that I love watching this in hindsight of when Roddy Piper, you know he's going over in a feud. When in the build-up to it, he sells like mad. Where like fucking Six is throwing punches at Roddy Piper, and Piper's acting like he's being hit with a fucking sledgehammer. Like, it's like, yeah, he's going over.
Yeah, they show the hip with the scar going down the side, which I never saw that scar ever again on Roddy Piper, but it doesn't matter. They showed the scar in the contract signing. But this show, I want to point this out, why I have to bring this up in the turning of the tables somewhat for WCW and WWF. The Giant wins the 60-man Battle Royal, okay? The Giant is an NWO member at this point. They then take the Giant out of the NWO about a month later because the Giant wants to cash in his title shot against Hulk Hogan, thus being the first person to leave the NWO when I don't think he should have been in it to start. But this is where I thought the NWO really started to take a nosedive. And that's funny that it's 5 months into them even being around was when they took the Giant out and he wants his world title shot against the Hulkster.
I don't know. I thought that it made sense at the time to me that if the biggest guy on the roster was the Giant, then in storyline world, why wouldn't they say, put that huge guy in our group so that we don't have to fight him? So that always made sense to me in that instance. But it was around that time where, like, I'm NWO Mark, but fuck, it was towards later 96, where I remember there was one Nitro, they added three members at the same time.
Yeah.
It was IRS and a Japanese wrestler and Scott Norton. And you just think, well, why?
Yeah. It's terrible. It was overkill. It was Norton turns on his partner Ice Train. I think, is that when Chono turns on Sonny Ono? He reveals the shirt underneath the jacket. Like, clearly a buttoned-up leather jacket with a black shirt sticking out is totally not going to be an NWO member. And then, an IRS pins somebody, and then they give him a contract. It's like, whoa, here we go. Now we got IRS on our team. That might have been Buff Bagwell, too, to be honest with you. It might have been four guys.
The Buff joined the week before because he joined when Hogan wasn't there.
Got it. He wouldn't let him see it. Buff, I liked. I like Buff. I don't mind Scott Norton in the group either, but they didn't need IRS at all.
Yeah,
BK was... Wall Street.
Oh, you were right. The fourth one was Big Boss Man.
See, I don't mind him being in it either because of the connection to Hogan. And if they wanted to go with WWF guys, then you don't put in Buff and Norton. You put in Wall Street and Boss Man. But I don't mind Bubba. If Bubba was the enforcer, I'm fine with that. But he just became a bit jobber guy who got beat up at the beginning of the show. That's what I hated about throwing these different guys in the NWO. And I don't like the Giant winning as a member of the NWO unless it's going to be, okay, well, now nobody has the title shot. We've got the belt. So then you fight somebody to lose the title shot kind of thing.
Yeah, there was definitely a case with the NWO, like in hindsight of like they're winning everything and they're selling for nobody. And it did get to the point where it's like, you're kind of overdoing it. And obviously, and then just while we're talking Piper versus Hogan, I remember the whole build being for Star Kid.
Yeah.
In a non-title match. And you just think, why?
They never mentioned that it was the non-title match. They led you to believe it was a title match the whole time. And whether or not that was the Hogan creative control saying, that's the only way I'm putting Piper over, and Piper not caring that it's not for the belt, he just gets to beat Hogan. You got to kind of like tip your cap to old school. Like, I don't need the belt. I just want to beat the guy because, you know, he beat me 10 years ago.
It's See, that's the sort of shit that they really... Like obviously, I still like WCW going into 97, but by what's the pay per view where they do the War Games Fall Brawl?
That's Fall Brawl. This Fall Brawl before here in September is one of the better storylines because that's the Sting storyline where the WCW turns their back on Sting. The fake one comes out, beats the guys up, and then the real one comes out for 5 minutes and then leaves. Like, that was excellent.
Yeah, but by the Fall Brawl 97, the NWO storyline is just dead.
Terrible. Yep.
Yeah, all the wrestlers have made a lot of money. All the wrestlers have had like a whole year of super partying. Like Conan, he's a good kid, but if you look at him by the end of 97, he looks like shit. Do you remember that famous Nitro when the NWO come out and they rebuilt the whole set and it took about an hour out of TV?
Yes.
If you look at Conan, you can tell he's brutally hungover and he's sweating and he looks like he's been awake for days.
He looks like Juan Unda eating a pizza.
Ah, what a time to be alive.
Let me read to you the competitors of World War III, 96, the 60-man over-the-top rope battle royal, and I'm going to read every single one. Tell me what you think about the WCW roster. Arn Anderson, Marcus Bagwell, The Barbarian, Chris Benoit, Big Bubba, Jack Boot.
A huge mark for Jack Boot. Is he no...
Well, outside of John Paz having Jack Boot on the show next week, who the fuck is Jack Boot?
I thought he was...
You thought it was really coming up. I don't know who the hell Jack Boot is.
Yeah, I'm coughing on my confusion.
Bunkhouse Buck, Ciclope, Disco Inferno, Jim Duggan, Bobby Eaton, Mike Enos, Galaxy, Joe Gomez, Jimmy Graffiti, Johnny Grunge, Juventud Guerrero, Eddie Guerrero, Scott Hall, Prince Iaukea, Ice Train, Mr. JL, Jeff Jarrett, Chris Jericho, Kenny Chaos, Conan, Lex Luger, Dean Malenko, Steve McMichael, Mang, Rey Mysterio, Hugh Morris, Kevin Nash, Scott Norton, Carl Oule, DDP, La Parca, Sergeant Craig Pittman, Jim Powers, Robbie Rage, Stevie Ray, Steven Regal, The Renegade before he died, Scotty Riggs, of course it was before he died because he's in the match. Yeah. Roadblock, Jacques Rougeau, Tony Rumble, the Boston Bad Boy, Mark Starr, Rick Steiner, Ron Studd, the Taskmaster, Six, Booker T, David Taylor, Ultimo Dragon, Viano Four, Michael Wall Street, Pez Watley, Alex Wright.
Yeah, bottom right.
What a just overbooked, just crowded three-ring circus.
Yeah, those types of matches, like when it's the winner gets a title shot type thing, it's just such a waste of time. Because
Kenny Chaos is going to get the victory.
there's your Starrcade main event, whatever. Fucking Jack Boot versus Hulk Hogan.
Who the hell is Jack Boot?
Yeah, it's...
Oh my God, it's Buddy Lee Parker, the guy who trained Goldberg at the power plant.
Of course it is.
So I think John Paz has had Jack Boot on the show. So there you go. I'm sure it was thrilling.
So when he was named that simply so that when he was eliminated, Heenan could do, "We've got boots on the ground."
Now, in contrast, the Survivor Series, you know, like I mentioned, you had Bret and Austin, Undertaker, Mankind, Shawn and Sid, and then in the matches on the undercard, you got the debut of The Rock. You have a couple of the 4-on-4 Survivor Series matches, and some of those are very corny, you know, and they still have some of the gimmicky characters, but now Triple H is the Intercontinental Champion, Bulldog and Owen are the tag champs. So they're kind of pushing themselves up a little bit out of the smoke, and they're rising above that kind of crappy WCW main event pay-per-view with all those jabronis in it.
Yeah, no, there's the thing about the roster of around that time is I remember you could tell that there was a lot of changes happening. Like, it didn't mean it was all going to happen overnight, but like this new guy, The Rock, you mentioned, of course, Triple H was getting a push finally. What's his name? Barry Windham's coolest look of all time.
With just a t-shirt and fatigues.
Jesus Christ.
He's the Stalker. He debuted a month before, already dropped the gimmick, and just was Barry Windham. Let me read you the ECW.
I'm just going to say that his gimmick as the Stalker was great because he would hang around the hotels and wait for photographs and then boast about it while making fun of other fans.
And there you go. How about that? I wasn't aware of that. Here's the ECW card. Tell me what you think. Big Stevie Cool defeats Kid Cash. At the time, was known as David Tyler Morton Jericho. Do you remember that nickname?
Of course. A huge mark for David Tyler Morton Jericho.
He looked like Ricky Morton. He kind of looked like Chris Jericho. And his name was David Cash. So they called him David Tyler Morton Jericho. Axel Rotten defeats Hack Myers. The first ever Bubba versus Devon match where Bubba breaks out the Bubba Cutter, which is actually a very cool visual because Devon was fat as shit and so was Bubba at the time. So for him to get Devon in the air was very impressive. The Eliminators fight Sabu and RVD to a time limit draw, which then leads to the Gangstas defeating the Eliminators and Sabu and RVD. Chris Candido, who was making his big match debut here against Mikey Whipwreck, wins with a powerbomb off the top rope. It's pretty impressive. Too Cold Scorpio, two weeks before, he would be Flash Funk, defeats Devin Storm, JT Smith, and Hack Myers in loser leaves town matches before being defeated by Louis Spicoli out the door. Okay. Sandman defeats Raven, and he's the champion, so he's defending. And then Funk and Dreamer beat Shane and Brian Lee. Not a bad show.
Not a must-see show either.
It's a good show. But here's why I'll tell you it's a good show, Husey. Because they used to break it up over like 4 weeks of TV. So you wouldn't see it all in one shot. You would see it one piece at a time. And then you go, oh, that was a damn good show because I didn't have to sit through 3.5 hours of it. I got to watch it in 45 minutes.
Yeah, but ECW was something that I really never got big into. Okay. It had its moments, but overall, there's a lot of stuff like that where you think, "Who the fuck is that?"
Now the woman with the franchise went on to do a couple of things in her career, so we got to give her a little bit of credit.
I'd like to go on to do her.
The next month in 96, December 96, kind of just like whatever. It's like they mailed it in. WWF has In Your House, It's Time. Sid and Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels kind of gets involved, and that leads to some more tension between the two of them. The mass transit incident happens in ECW where New Jack basically nearly kills a guy who lied about being trained. And WCW has Starrcade, which is the main event of Hogan and Piper, where Piper wins by submission in a non-title match.
Yeah, I remember It's Time, even at the time, thinking this is like a thrown together shit show. I thought that Hart versus Sid was happening way too quickly.
I agree. Yep.
Because there wasn't any form of, like, he literally just debuted. I remember Steve Austin not being on that show, which was weird.
Yep.
And then what's the fucking guy, the Executioner?
Yep. Yeah. Undertaker defeats Executioner in an Armageddon rules match.
Yeah, but the problem was to bring in your guy, Terry Gordy, who had what, like, years of drinking drug abuse had really slowed him down.
Yeah, he was brain dead essentially at that point.
Yeah, so and he was terrible. So now he's going to come in and take fucking Mick Foley's spot, and you just think that I just remember that being a real disastrous match. And then Shawn Michaels was on commentary, and it's like, that's why you can't get over as a babyface, because you're so angry.
Yeah. He's shooting on guys, and he's coming off as a sarcastic prick, and you're supposed to be like, oh, but he's a good guy. I like him.
Yeah, like that was sort of like the real Shawn Michaels, but you know what I always remember reading about that event that was weird? Is that Shawn Michaels still wrestled after the show?
Yeah, so at this show, so let me just give you the rundown. The show itself, it takes place West Palm Beach, Florida, 5,700 people in attendance for this pay-per-view to end their year. Rocky Maivia defeats Sal Sincere, and this is the pay-per-view. Flash Funk defeats Leaf Cassidy. Owen Hart and the Bulldog defeat the fake Razor and the fake Diesel, so they get tag title matches. Mark Marrow defeats Hunter Hearst Helmsley by countout. Undertaker defeats Executioner. Sid defeats Bret Hart. Now here's your dark matches after the show. Brakus, the big jacked up German guy, defeats Dr. X, who I believe was Danny Davis. And then ready for this? Stone Cold Steve Austin defeats Goldust with Marlena. And Shawn Michaels defeats Mankind in the main event.
See, that's the insane thing, is that when you have Shawn Michaels and Shawn Michaels and Mankind tear the house down at Mind Games, do a rematch.
Yeah, and it was only 6 minutes.
It's stupid, especially when you consider the fact that fucking that they had Owen and Bulldog against the fucking fake Razor and Diesel.
It's terrible, terrible.
Yeah, it's that type of logical booking, which you always get fans go, "Oh, Vince lost his way." It's like, no, he always made dumb decisions.
All you had to do was take the fake Razor and the fake Diesel out, put the Executioner and Mankind in that spot, and now you have a heel versus heel match still, but you're saving the fake Razor and fake Diesel from being cast off already as a joke and being beaten. Like, why wouldn't you just have them come out and beat guys like Leaf Cassidy, have them beat him 1, 2, 3, it's over, 2 minutes. Instead, you feed them to your tag champs a month into them being around or 2 months into them being around. And I know they didn't have legs, but I just watched a shotgun Saturday night from January 97 where the fake Diesel, my buddy Glenn Jacobs, power bombs and pins 1, 2, 3 Mark Merrow in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, it's... And then wasn't it the Royal Rumble where Diesel... Diesel was one of the final four guys.
He was really, technically, and I always used to say that, they should have done the final five, and it would have been the fake Diesel in there in the spot where the Austin came back and threw everybody out. Fake Diesel was the next to last person.
Yeah, it's so, they should have had that It's Time pay-per-view open up with Austin versus, Shawn Michaels versus Mankind, if he's just coming off a loss. I've never understood the way WWE would, at a time like that, not have all of their stars on all the shows.
They're going up against the marquee match that literally built their company 10 years earlier in Piper and Hogan at Starrcade. The rest of Starrcade are stacked. Let me just read it quick. I'll go through the big matches. Eddie Guerrero, DDP in the tournament final for the U.S. Championship. Lex Luger and the Giant. The Outsiders against the Faces of Fear. Jeff Jarrett, Benoit. Jushin Thunder Liger and Rey Mysterio. It's pretty damn good.
Yeah, yeah. And not only just that, but at the time, as we were mentioning, like the NWO was fucking amazing. The Sting shit was so weird. Like nobody really knew what was going on. It was at a time. Oh, and you know what I remember around that time was when the Giant was officially kicked out of the NWO. And I think that might have come after Starrcade.
But yes, it was after. Yeah.
Yeah, by TV standards of its time, that was one of the most violent things you'd ever seen, where it was like 9-on-1, they kicked the shit out of him, and then Sting came down from the ceiling, gave him a baseball bat, and they fought the NWO off. And it's like, I think I'm converting over from to watching this instead of the male stripper guy.
Yeah, and the next event, so December 29th is Starrcade. The next night they kick him out because he lost to Luger and he wanted his title shot. The next event is sold out, where the main event is Piper as the Giant versus Hogan in that just, oh my God, terrible, whatever the hell they are, Idaho or South Dakota, or the fuck they are. Where are they? Oh, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, where they have the ugliest Miss NWO contest in history. And Hogan beats the Giant in a singles match in 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's a great idea on paper, but in execution, it was fucking shit, as they say.
Eddie Guerrero beats Six. That's a great match. That's a ladder match. It's probably the best match on the show. But the Steiners beating the Outsiders for the tag champ is my favorite match on the show, because that's where Randy Anderson, the ref, comes out of the crowd, counts to three, and then Bischoff has that great segment, I think, the next night, where he fires him. Tell your daddy he's fired. That's great.
And of course, because I'm a mark, the great thing about that pay-per-view, that venue, is that they've put it in the current WWE 2K video game.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, and they've recreated it exactly. And even the picture quality camera grain, it's just, it's quite good.
Well, before you hock a loogie on your soundboard, before you hock a loogie on the soundboard, we will get you out of here for this edition of New Generation Declassified. Do you like this format of encompassing the Outsiders of the WWF a little bit more, but still kind of keeping a WWF flavor?
Yes, because it was around this time that the WCW really, frankly, changed the whole industry to the point that WWE is now, in 2022, doing a lot of WCW stuff. Like, the Bloodline basically is the NWO. They just did a War Games.
Yeah.
Bray Wyatt is, in a way, doing the Sting gimmick from 96. So, overall, despite what a lot of the diehard critics want to say, WCW has won.
I tend to agree, as much as I'm a WWF guy. You're about halfway dead. So give your plugs before we get out of here. Oh my God.
Check out Huge Entertainment on YouTube. That's the video channel where you get to see my interviews with people from all kinds of genres around the world. It's from the world of comedy to the world of music, cinema. Hopefully going to get those porno interviews in 2023. Could be good stuff there.
You're going for the porno route. You know, I had discussed going that route with my IB exclusive signing people, just because it's an industry that's not very tapped. So that's very intriguing.
Which is ironically, because I was supposed to interview Lisa Ann,
Interesting.
At some point over the summer, but I was shocked. I wasn't feeling well, so I had to drop out of her, to drop out of that interview. And I think she's basically, I've never really tried to get up to get it back again.
Get up.
Yeah, she still looks amazing for someone that's 50. Like, my God.
She does. I agree with you on that one. She absolutely does. But that is a totally untapped market. So you have my full support.
Thank you very much. So does her bra.
All right. Well, that's the Husey making his return again. We'll do this probably in 2 weeks. I might have one new show before the end of the year and then take 2 weeks off before we get back for the kickoff to 2023. Mm. I might honestly start with the winter of 97 or the new year of 97 and continue that, not in a timeline fashion, but I think I just want to go with 97 to start. But ever evolving world that New Generation Declassified is. If you want to follow me, it's at Chad EMB on Twitter, at IB Exclusives on Instagram. My website is ibexclusives.com. Do not try to contact me on Facebook. I am no longer on that platform. It's a long story, but because of one possible person, I am no longer there, and we will live to fight another day. So Husey, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and as always, I will catch you on the flip side.